Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 255, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, special Valentine's Day edition. It's somehow the 255th week of the Pancakes and Power Slam Show landed right on Valentine's Day. So why not bring someone who not only had an affair, quote-unquote, with Daniel Bryan, not only tried to win the heart of Braxton Sutter, but she also showed just a little flirtatiousness during her time at Tough Enough. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, TNA's Laurel Van Ness. How are you tonight, ma'am?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Awesome, awesome. So, so you've been in business for a few years now, still in your mid-20s, still got so much to go, but even in these few years of wrestling, you've already been on Tough Enough, you're a TNA star, and you're in a major WWE angle. Now, you were training, only in a few years. How about that?
It's crazy.
It sure is, absolutely. So you were trained by Lance Storm, right?
Yes, I was. Yep, in 2014.
Wow. So what made you, a lot of people saw just the desire that you had and how good you were doing your time and Tough Enough. What was it that made you know that this is professional wrestling is it? This is the way to go. This is where I want my career path to be.
Well, it's funny because I actually wasn't allowed to watch wrestling growing up. So I didn't grow up, like some diehard wrestling fan. I watched it. Don't get me wrong. I snuck upstairs and I was able to watch it, but not very often. Mm-hmm. So I actually kind of fell into it. I was living in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, which, of course, is where the Heart Dungeon was. A lot of the Hearts came out of that school. And then of course, Lampstorm Wrestling Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was living there, and I became a little bit complacent with my life at the time, and was doing homework one night, and Monday Night Raw was on TV. And I don't know what it was, but something in my mind clicked. Like, oh my God, I want to do that. Like, what am I doing sitting on the couch? I want to be a wrestler. And I had never stepped in a ring. I had only been to one WWE show in my life ever, a very small house show in my hometown. And within that week, I had contacted Lance and was ready to go to my first lesson at Storm Wrestling Academy. And I stepped in that ring, and I immediately knew that this was something that I was born to do.
Nice. That's awesome. Now, what type of nuggets did you get from the great Lance Storm?
Oh, gosh. Honestly, he has taught me 99.9% of what I know right now. It's unbelievable. You know, he doesn't just teach you how to lock up, how to take a bump. He teaches you everything from interacting with fans and with your coworkers to locker room etiquette to, how to deal with stress on the road and the importance of staying away from drugs and alcohol. Like, he is such an amazing teacher. I couldn't even narrow down, you know, the best parts of what he's taught me, because he continues to teach me.
Yeah, that's awesome. So even a few years after, he's continuing to influence you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's a lot of things that he taught me in those 3 months of his training that I now have started to understand, because as you grow as a wrestler and kind of figure out who you are, things start to click, and things he used to say to me, when I was training that I maybe didn't understand then, I understand now. And on top of that, I do go back to Calgary and train with them a little bit every now and then.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That is absolutely amazing. So, I mean, just we were talking about this fast track into you and to so much television exposure a year, you know, after you got trained. You landed a spot the same year, right? There were a few months.
Yeah.
The Megan Miller thing with Daniel Bryan, a year after, you got that tough enough spot. How in the world were you chosen out of every person, any possible person? How did Megan Miller come about, and how are you the chosen one?
Well, to be honest, you know, I thought about that for quite a long time. I thought, like, why me? I don't understand. Why me? There's so many amazing girls out there that want this, and so many amazing indie wrestlers. But at the end of the day, I, after getting that spot as Megan Miller, did not leave WWE alone until I was hired in some form. And I'm sure they'd say the same thing if you asked them. You know, every 5 to 6 weeks, I emailed them, I called them, I checked up, I made sure they knew, you know, that I had done new shows, that I had got new promo pictures, that I had new gear, that my hair was different. Like, it didn't matter what it was, I made sure that my name was always on their minds. And I think that's what really helped me. On top of that, I was very new. So I didn't have, you know, although I really did have an edge against the other females, knowing the wrestling industry, having worked on the indies for a little bit, I didn't have the same exposure as some of the indie girls who have done Shimmer and who have gone to Japan. I didn't have that yet. So I still was very new where, you know, we were all on the same page, skill-wise in different areas. I could wrestle, but, you know, some of the girls could lift. Some of the girls could run. Some of them could, you know, were fighters. So we all kind of had an edge in a different way. So I didn't have that crazy advantage. But I still, to this day, you know, I think, oh, my gosh, what an amazing opportunity they gave me, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you went straight to being involved and an angle with Stephanie McMahon. I mean, that's people who've been in the company for years, you know, dream of that opportunity. So yeah, that's absolutely awesome. So how did it all come about? How did the storyline play? Of course, at that time, you know, Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan, which, you know, are married now and about to have a kid. And at that time, you know, there was a big feud going on between Brie Bella and Stephanie McMahon, which led to a major match. And how was it, you know, that it all came about? Like, you were who called you, and, you know, just kind of relive all that for the listeners, as far as who came out with the angle and what were, you know, of course we saw your part on Raw, but how nervous were you at the time?
Well, I had just come out of training. I was 3 months out of training. Mm-hmm. And I got a call asking if I would like to be a Rosebud. So, of course, I said yes. I was extremely excited. And on the second day of being a Rosebud, I believe we were in Yakima, Washington, which is, like, such a tiny, tiny little town. You know, it took me, like, 6 hours to drive there. I was so excited to be a Rosebud. And they said, we want you to come in for Raw tomorrow, and we have a little part for you. So I thought, well, that's cool. Okay. No problem. I'll be there, you know. I came in. I did the same thing I had done the last 2 days. I, you know, changed with all the Rosebuds and got ready. And then one of the kind of backstage helpers at Raw pulled me aside and said, we just need you to come over here. We're going to chat with you a bit about your little part today. And they actually walked me in to the room, and in front of me was Triple H, Stephanie, and Vince McMahon. And immediately in that moment, I thought, oh my God, this is way bigger than I could have ever thought it would be. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. They handed me a script and they said, okay, come to the ring in an hour. Be ready. And I'm like, okay. And I'm reading the script, and one of the names on the script says Stephanie and one says Megan. And I'm going through it and I'm like, I have no idea what this is. Like, I mean, I'm not Stephanie. So am I Megan? Like, who is Megan? Well, I still didn't understand. It didn't really click until I started thinking, okay, well, I'm going to memorize this Megan person's lines. And I hope that that's what they want me to do. You know, I didn't really get much instruction. And I came up to the ring and sure enough, we're going over the lines and, you know, they want me in the middle of the ring with a microphone telling everybody on TV 1 week before SummerSlam that I slept with Daniel Bryan. And yeah, in that moment, I will never forget Vince McMahon standing in front of me, listening to me, Stephanie McMahon standing beside me, and then all of the wrestlers around the ring listening to me. It was, that alone was one of the scariest moments. Just saying those words out loud.
Yeah.
Never mind being on TV in front of, you know, millions of people and everybody tuning in to watch the storyline come together before SummerSlam. But it was a sink or swim situation that they put me in. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Those are the situations that I work best in, is under pressure. And I knew that this was my chance. If I want a tryout, you know, if I want a diva tryout, if I want to make an impact in this company, I need to nail this promo. And I went out there and, you know, my acting skills were awful, but it was a ridiculous and great mini little angle I had for 3 minutes, and I loved it. I soaked it all in.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's one of the most memorable angles in the past few years for sure. Absolutely. So you were selected as an alternate for Tough Enough, if I'm not mistaken. And how did that come about? Like, did they remember you when you submitted your information? And, you know, how was it that, if I'm not mistaken, you were an alternate, and how did they go through the, you know, the selection process of finding you? How did that go about as far as picking you for Tough Enough? And did they know you before they looked at your tape?
Well, I didn't send anything in. I had been at a tryout. So 6 months after I did Megan Miller, I was called in for a Divas tryout. And I did that tryout, and at the tryout, they were scouting for Tough Enough.
Okay.
So almost, you know, almost all of the people at the tryout, the ones that had big personalities, were taken aside and put on camera and asked to just talk, you know, just talk about whatever you wanted. They asked a couple questions just to see how you dealt with the camera. And I did that and was asked to come back for the 3-day tryout camp for Tough Enough. And that's when they narrowed it down. And of course, it was, gosh, some of the most beautiful and fit people I've ever seen in my life at this trial for Tough Enough. So I initially didn't make the cut, but I was told, if anything happens to one of the contestants, you will be called in as you're an alternate. So, which they have clips of that on the Tough Enough, you know, behind the scenes footage. And, you know, lucky enough for me, unlucky for another contestant, she dropped out and I was more than willing to take her place.
Yeah. And you were one of the most polished female contestants on Tough Enough, but you finished fourth place. And I watched all of it week after week. I covered it every week here on my show. And because it was very interesting, I think this Tough Enough was a bit interesting than the other ones. I think the other ones started to get a bit diluted, but this was good. I mean, you had a star-studded lineup. You had Daniel Bryan, you had The Miz, you had Hulk Hogan, you had Chris Jericho. So, you know, I think they put a lot in this one. You finished fourth place, surprise to many. And how, what were your thoughts on that? I mean, you know, here's the thing though, you finishing fourth place, you know, was a proverbial blessing in disguise because it landed you in a very, very good spot now. So it really all worked out.
Yeah, it did. And you know, the minute that they sent me home, I was heartbroken. You can see it in my face. I immediately went backstage and cried. And then I thought, no, this, you know what? No, this isn't something to cry about. I don't need to be on reality TV to make it. I never did need to be on reality TV to make it. This was just a stepping stone to get somewhere that was even greater. And I was very, very hurt and upset when I heard that a lot of the cast of Tough Enough was signed and they hadn't reached out to me. That hurt more than being kicked off of some silly reality show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did my best, and I think that everyone saw that I deserved to be in the final two of Tough Enough, but I wasn't. And you know, like, life isn't fair. So that's okay. It hurt me not getting that call later on after being put through so much on Tough Enough, you know?
Yeah.
Going through basically every week with a sprained ankle that was sprained so bad that it took me about 4 months to heal it, yet I was running the ropes and body slamming the girls better than they were.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came down to it, I thought, wow, I'm pretty sure I showed athleticism and heart and, you know, everything that you would think they would want a diva to be, and yet they didn't want me. But I decided I can't dwell on it. You know, I need to show them what they're missing out on. I need to show them that I'm going to make it whether they want me or not, and I'm going to make them want me. And I think that that's what I did. I spent that next year, you know, going to India, going to Japan.
Yeah.
I broke my collarbone in and rehabbed it within 6 weeks, which is absolutely unheard of. I, you know, ended up on national TV for TNA. And I kind of did everything I wanted to do in that next year, and people started to notice, and that's all I can ask for.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and especially now, there's a big angle going on with you and Braxton Sutter during your time here in Impact Wrestling as Laurel Van Ness. First of all, how did Laurel Van Ness, where did that name come from? And, you know, how were you selected to be in an angle with Ali and Maria Kanellis Bennett?
You know what? I can't answer either of those. It's just how it works backstage. They, you know, there's so many creative minds back there that are kind of always plotting and always coming up with new storylines, and that's just kind of what my character fell into, and I think it's so perfect for the Laurel Van Ness character because she is very evil.
Yes, very.
You know, and it's perfect. It's such a good storyline to get someone hated.
Yeah. So big angle, big thing coming up, big wedding, so to speak, coming up with Braxton Sutter. What should the viewers of Impact Wrestling expect?
Oh, my gosh. Absolute mayhem. I cannot wait for everyone to see this. You know, I think a lot of people started tuning into Impact Wrestling again with the Hardys doing all their crazy stuff. And I think that this is just going to give all the viewers another reason to stay tuning in and hopefully pull in some new audience as well.
Yeah.
It is just chaos. I can't wait for you guys to see it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, she's a very devious heel, Chelsea Green, also known as Laurel Van Ness in Impact Wrestling. Where can the listeners find you?
Oh, gosh, I'm so bad with this. I always forget my own social media handles. But let me see if I can get this right. You can go onto Facebook, look up Chelsea Green. There's my fan page there. You can go on to Twitter, @ImpactLVN, and Instagram, Chelsea A. Green.
Fantastic. Do you have any Valentine's Day advice to people? Do you have a Valentine of your own?
Oh, my goodness. You know what my Valentine is today? The gym. I, no joke, am at the gym for the second time today while I'm talking.
Wow, nice. That's awesome.
So my Valentine's advice is don't eat too much chocolate and make sure you get to the gym.
There you go. Fantastic advice. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, all the listeners, she's got some very devious things coming up with Impact Wrestling, so be sure to check it out. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Laurel Van Ness, ladies and gentlemen, from TNA, also known as Chelsea Green from Tough Enough. Yeah, she's doing some great things, man. She's only 25 years old. She'll be 26 here in a couple of months. Young talent, been a wrestler for 3 years, but already has been Daniel Bryan's alleged affair, been on Tough Enough, fourth place, and now making some huge noise in Impact Wrestling as Laurel Van Ness. So Impact Wrestling, there's a big angle going on. So tune in to Impact Wrestling this week to see. And yeah, she'll be on there, and she's making some very devious actions with her character. So yeah, she's been doing it really good. And you can tell that's a Lance Storm type of thing. It's just really just the cadences and knowing how to work the heel role from an acting standpoint as well. And she's been a great competitor too. She showed that on Tough Enough. So Impact Wrestling, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I've had my fair share of ups and downs to critique Impact Wrestling, but she's definitely one of those characters on Impact that will keep you coming to continue the listeners and I mean the viewers to continue their interest in Impact Wrestling. I mean, of course, like she said, with Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy and Vanguard One and all the everybody in the Hardy compound, it's wonderful. Yes, but you know, there's definitely some talent. I've always said with Impact Wrestling, the talent roster is still very, very good. So that's definitely not the thing to complain about. Ladies and gentlemen, we have such an action-packed evening tonight. We have just our guest tonight. Of course, we have our wonderful, wonderful co-host from Under the Mat Radio, Evan Prout. He is coming on tonight. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing good. Live, live, live.
Absolutely. And our special guest tonight is from Forbes magazine, from Bleach Report. He was my fellow feature columnist for Bleach Report for a number of years. He is one of the biggest villains on Bleacher Report. I haven't read Bleacher Report's articles in quite some time. I just haven't got to reading it, but I think I may read stuff again. I was a feature columnist there for over 3 years and went to different greater heights with Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports, freelancing there, and of course now with Sportskeeda and The Inquisitor. Speaking of Sportskeeda, this guy also does his own SmackDown review and some pay-per-view previews and all types of video stuff with Sportskeeda. So he is once again my coworker. So once again, it's great to have you working side to side, my Harlem Heat tag team partner, ladies and gentlemen, Big Nasty Alfred Konoha. How are you tonight, sir?
What is going on? What a great intro. I mean, I can't live up to all that, you know, great stuff you said about me. You read all my credits. You did forget one thing, though, and that one thing is that I am also your Valentine tonight, so it's just an honor all across the board.
To all the listeners that we have, we're about 15,000 now, and all of you who are listening to the show tonight, the cat's out the bag. You know, people do know that I'm married with two kids, but thanks for letting everyone know, Alfred.
I felt that our love is too real to keep it sealed up.
That's right, Bay.
And it's such great news. It's okay. Is it all right if I call you AK, Alfred? It's such great news.
Absolutely.
That AK and Stonefeather Valentine's, with the history of how wrestling has been with the bromances, Kevin Owens and Jericho, you got
Kez
and Christopher Daniels, you have, you know, Billy and Chuck. Everybody's turning against their fellow brethren, so I say Stonefeather, watch out. He might throw you in front of a monitor.
Nice segue.
You know.
Yeah.
WrestleMania's just around the corner, so we could set something up between me and Chris. You never know.
Oh, that's right.
There's about 6 weeks left. Yeah, that's right. And there's a lot of time.
And they're going to tell us every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of a lot of time, we got we don't have that. We got about an hour to talk about all the stuff going on. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, headlines. Here we go. As we're joking about Valentine's Day and things of that nature, it's definitely sad to bring it down on a somber note, unfortunately. However, I do want to take this time to share some stories about Chavo Guerrero Sr. to spin it to a positive note. Of course, he passed away recently, within the past few days. And Chavo Classic, ladies and gentlemen, the father of Chavo Guerrero Jr. He famous competitor for a number of years, made his time in WWE. As Chavo Classic, former cruiserweight champion, how about that? So let's condolences and our prayers go out to the Guerrero family. Very poignant statement that Chavo Jr. made on Instagram when the passing and when it was announced. So yeah, we definitely offer our condolences to the Guerrero family. Let's spin it to a positive, and we'll start with Alfred. Let the listeners know your memorable Chavo Classic moments.
I love the Chavo Classic character, first off, and I'll get to that in a second, but I just think Chavo Guerrero as a wrestler, he was always one of the more underrated professional wrestlers in history. Like, in his prime, I don't think his level of expertise in wrestling, the level that he could go, ever matched how he got booked. I mean, he could arenas, he could draw tickets, he could always carry anybody in a match, and he was just a really good wrestler. But I think he was always kind of booked beneath that. Just a very underrated guy. That's what I'm always going to remember about him. And it was really actually very, feel good to see him as a Chavo Classic character, because he didn't take himself so seriously. It was pretty self-aware, although I would hear backstage stories about how he would, he's really kind of took himself maybe too seriously as a cruiserweight champion when it was kind of a joke, and he did a good job as like a comedy gimmick, and I just thought it was so good to see him, you know, kind of as like an older cruiserweight, but he just did really well. He could still go. He could still work like an old man style and do moonsaults and stuff like that, so I just thought he was always a very talented, underrated talent.
Indeed. Evan, you have some actual stories from Chavo Classic based on your interaction with him and his family.
Yeah, Chavo, yeah, former guest of my show. Chavo Senior was on my show about middle of 2013. We talked on Facebook and off camera. Very good guy, very laid back, but had like a little intensity to him, but he was real fun. Fun to talk to. I know we talked a lot off air and on my show. You can listen. I sent you Chris the link where, you know, he talked about beer and how much he liked drinking cheap beer and you know, just working in the business. And he was a good guy. Like you said, very underrated. A lot of times in the business, you hear people talk about the families, you know, the Harts and the Hennings, and but I always feel the Guerreros never fully get that due because a lot of the four kids to today are, you know, they always say Eddie, and, you know, Chavo Jr., but it's like, do your research. Gory Guerrero, Mondo, and you know, you got Hector and Chavo Sr. was just great. You know, the world-class matches were great and wrestling in Mexico. So, I mean, Chavo always kept himself up well. And they had some, I suppose, it was maybe a year or so ago on Facebook, just checking up on him, and he was always a good spirit. You know, same way, you know, I'm also good friends with Hector Guerrero. They sound similar on the phone. It's weird because Hector sounds like Eddie, but, you know, Hector's more laid back and calm. You could always get like an undertone of how Chavo Senior, this isn't a negative, it's a good thing how he was intense, and you know, you didn't want to mess with Chavo Senior, so he definitely will be missed. He also said on my show, don't call him Chavo Classic. He said, either call me Chavo or Chavo Senior. So, but a very good guy. Very, very good guy. He'll be missed.
Yeah, indeed. Chavo, Chavo Senior, I can see him saying something like that. But, you know, the mainstream fans know him well as Chavo Classic. And you made a really good point, Evan, as far as the Guerrero name. I think Guerrero is one of the best, you know, families, wrestling families in pro wrestling history. And, you know, listen, you know, you also talked about, you know, Eddie and Chavo Jr. But, yeah, the lesser-known Guerrero names, but we forget that Gory is the only one who has a wrestling move named after him. So
the Gory special.
So,
yeah. Remember the Gory Bomb.
Yeah, the Gory Bomb as well.
The Gory Bomb.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the fans sent me a match, Chavo Guerrero was seeing against Arn Anderson that I never knew existed. So on YouTube, I can send you guys the link. So
yeah, that sounds great. I'll be very interested in that. Taking a very, very steep step down, Rosa Mendez is retiring from professional wrestling. She never really got a chance to be really anything. I mean, she was in the business for 10 years and just jumping back and forth from Chavo. I mean, not from Chavo, Carlito and Primo Nepico and Fandango and, you know, Total Divas and all the other things that she was just involved in. She never really had an opportunity to really gain any steam. She's never been the one. I mean, the first, she was like a plant for who? She came as a plant for who? I don't know. Back in like 2006 or 7. I forgot. But she came in as a plant. Who was it?
I can't remember either. I'm trying to remember. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Who was it? Candice Michelle?
Oh no, she was a fan for Santino. She was like Santino Morello's biggest fan, and Beth Phoenix.
It was, yeah, I think
Beth Phoenix. That's who it was. Beth Phoenix. Yep. Beth Phoenix is a fan. Yeah, she was a fan of Beth Phoenix, and she was feuding with that's when Beth Phoenix was feuding against Melina. So she was attacking Melina. Okay, that's what it was. Yeah. That was some type of progress or some type of promise to her character, but she never really had an opportunity to deal with it. But the positive note is that she, you know, the Fit Mamas or Fit by Mamas or something like that, her business that she's doing, it seems like it's pretty lucrative, and you know, she's in a pretty serious relationship, just had a baby, so she's doing some really good things post WWE. You know, she's 38 or about to be 38, I believe. So she's it's, you know, I guess, you know, she realized that I'm about to be 38 years old. I'm not going to be WWE Raw or SmackDown Women's Champion. And I've got a family to tend to, and that's it. So, Evan, what are your thoughts on Rosa retiring?
I mean, it's unfortunate. I know she definitely was eye candy. She definitely got my attention, you know, looking at it. I mean, she looked great. But like you said, it just was, you know, the wheels on the bus for it didn't go round and round, and she really didn't get a chance to really blossom. I mean, you know, WWE, half the battle was your looks, and even probably two-thirds of it. So she definitely had a look to her. She's a very, very good-looking woman. But, you got to give her credit. It's, you know, she tried. She was in WWE. She tried to do different things, and it just didn't work out, and now she's moving on with her family life, and she's starting her life, and she was able to accept to say, hey, you know, I was able to try to do something, and I was there for a hot second, I'm moving on. Yeah. Whereas some stars, they, you know, they just overstay their welcome. Some people only get 15 minutes of fame, and in this case, you know, that's all she got, but I'm glad she's doing well.
Alfred, how much is the WWE Universe going to miss Rosa Mendez?
To be blunt, as much as, you know, I did enjoy some more. To be blunt, I don't think, yeah, not that much.
You know,
I'm not going to know. I'm not to Rosa. I'm saying it as, like, just knowing the WWE Universe, it's just they take their wrestling very seriously, especially WWE's core audience. Now, it's kind of become more of a hardcore audience. It's not what it was in the Attitude Era, where it's just like, you know, they had as many casual fan viewing the product, but Rosa was always kind of mired in this era where it wasn't about women's wrestling as much as it was just kind of models who were trained to wrestle, and wrestling may not have been perceived as their passion. So now that we're in this women's revolution where you're seeing the Becky Lynch's, and, you know, Mickie James is back, and you're seeing Bayley and Charlotte, and just pretty much rewrite wrestling, people are going to look back, especially right now, at Rosa Mendez, like, oh, yeah, that's right. She really wasn't one of those wrestlers, you know. Which I think is unfortunate because, you know, from what I could see, she worked very hard. I remember she went through this stint where, I guess backstage they were saying that she needed to drop weight, and they made it a storyline on camera, which is just, you know, one of those things that WWE does to be petty. But, you know, she got herself into great shape. She clearly took this seriously. And, you know, with what she was given, I thought she performed admirably. It's just that she's not going to be remembered as this revered figure. But, again, and Evan hit on this, and I thought this was a great point, talking about life after wrestling. As sad as this may sound, I always love seeing wrestlers who have an exit plan, because a lot of wrestlers get sucked into it, and this business chews you up and spits you out. And it's really scary how a lot of wrestlers die young. But she's one of those success stories where maybe her life out of wrestling is going to be way more successful than it ever was in the ring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I certainly think it's going to be. And you brought up some very good points, especially as far as the model era when it came to wrestlers. The first person I thought about is Kelly Kelly. And, you know, people probably forgot her completely by now.
My personal dislike for her, too. So
dislike for her?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan. I had a little brush against her and her air quote assistant, and, you know, she tried to be a little, you know, high sedity, if you will, as Dusty Rhodes say. But, in long story short, not to bury anybody, because we're all professionals here, she thought she was a little higher than what she really is on the totem pole of wrestling. And then I had to let her know, and just told her up front, I just interviewed Goldberg. I just interviewed Bischoff, and I'm talking to Jim Cornette. So why would you think I would have to pay to interview you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. This was face to face. I'm not gonna mention what convention because a lot. Featherstone. I'll take y'all off air where this convention is at. All the stars was there. It was tons of legends. You know, Jimmy Snooker, my late great buddy, was there as well. And I have witnesses as far as my staff included, two other very well successful radio shows in wrestling, and Eric Bischoff himself was there, and some other the boys that witnessed that. So yeah, Kelly.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know.
That's one of those things that you know it's so funny. It's funny that you say about paying for interviews. I've had. I don't know where I'm at right now. I'll be 5 years April 3rd, but as far as number of interviews I've had on the show, I don't know, maybe 80 or something.
Yeah.
I have no clue.
Right.
I think I'm like at the 80 echelon now. But yeah, there was the people, and I'm not going to say names because people were just the exposure this show gets. I'm not going to embarrass anyone, but the people who have told me, yeah. I'll do an interview, but I'll pay for it. Just totally cracks me up. I'm sure maybe, you know, Alfred, do you have any similar stories to that?
No, I was just about to say, like, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, I'm right over there with you guys in that, like, I've done interviews. I've had the honor of doing interviews with some luminaries, and I've never once been propositioned to pay for it. So, I mean, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. DDP didn't have to pay. Jake Roberts didn't have to pay. Rikishi didn't have to pay. I mean, you know, just the legends that I've interviewed. And then I'll have some, you know, one of the people is a current New Japan wrestler who was formerly in NXT and didn't do anything in NXT. He's kind of doing something in New Japan right now. And, yeah, I mean, he was like, yeah, you know, I charge. I'm like, oh, okay, well, see ya.
Yeah.
No can do.
Stone Feather, you're, as you know, on the show of AK, now, and let everybody know that, listen, we're just giving stories. We're all humble, and we're blessed to be in a position to interview a lot of the likes of WWE, TNA, RH, Lucha Underground. We all have friends that work for those companies. But the thing that went viral for me, not sure if AK knows, but I know Stonefighter knows at all, and a fellow Click member, I'm not mentioning his name, went up to me at a show and was like, wait, you look familiar. Oh, it's when we buried Virgil. Because Sir Virgil, right, the legendary Virgil.
Wow.
And I'll say his name again, Virgil. Now, Vincent told me that we would have to pay $15,000 to get him on my show. Quote, the legit quote,
wow.
$15,000. And I stayed next to Rob Feinstein, and me and Rob Feinstein laughed at each other because we're buddies, and I know how much Rob paid him for his shoot. It wasn't even a quarter. And I'm not going to mention names, is that probably a potential WWE Hall of Famer probably for the next couple of years. Definitely a Japan legend and WCW legend tried to let me know how much he was going to pay. And I kindly reminded him on, because he got my name mixed up, and reminded him that I helped him out to some bookings. He's like, oh, no problem, I'll go. But yeah. So yeah,
the moral of the story is, is similar to what you said, Alfred, and what Evan said. This is the exit strategy for professional wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow my stock is so high that I'm going to charge someone to interview me when, in fact, a lot of the interviews that people go on is, you know, first of all, if you're going to go on an interview, I can certainly understand from a wrestling standpoint. I just don't want to be on any podcast because there's so many podcasts just roaming around here. They're like ants. You just have to stay. You have to step on most of them, and you know. But at the same time, if you do your research and you know that the podcast is legitimate and have a very high following, you know, still asking at that time is yeah. It makes you obsolete, as Jeff Harley would say. Jeff Harvey would say. Shout out to. Mike Adamley, who's spending time in the hospital. Let's our prayers are for Mike that he'll have a speedy recovery and he'll once again say Jeff Harvey successfully one day. Next we have Michael, Legends with JBL and Stone Cold Podcast. Both are allegedly no longer airing new episodes. JBL basically confirmed it. There's some sources also talking about the Stone Cold Podcast. Alfred, these were two of the best original episodes, original content on the WWE Network. Why in the world would they remove Road Stories from Legends?
They really were. I completely agree with you as to where these were two of my favorite shows on WWE Network, because too many times their WWE shows, they're just kind of protected and they don't want to give you the full scope of what's going on. Like, you know, when you see a lot of these shows, the opposite of this would be like WWE 24, where they do show you backstage what's going on. And, you know, WWE Network has a largely hardcore following, and I really love when they have these shows that kind of pull back the curtain and they don't insult their audience who, you know, go on dirt sheets and they know what's going on backstage and they want to know that information. They've got a thirst for this backstage culture of WWE. I thought Austin's podcast did a wonderful job of just having a casual conversation about the real life of professional wrestling, and I thought JBL did an equally as good job. So the fact that these two shows are going away might represent a sea change in WWE, that they no longer want to be the shoot network. That maybe they want to broaden their horizons and have more shows focused on, you know, this kind of low-rent reality television that they do. Because we did see their recent earnings reports, which, you know, I had to study up for an article on Forbes. They did really well with their TV revenue and the reality television shows and their licensing. It's actually, you know, producing quite a profit for them. So maybe they're just exploring that more, and they don't want to do as much of the interview, professional wrestling, like shoot interview type genre. But I really did get a kick out of those shows.
Yeah, well said. Evan, are your thoughts similar compared to the two shows on the WWE Network?
Yeah, I'm with AK. Man, I love the Jibble. I love Jibble's show. Shout out to Jibble for, you know, of course, blocking us when we blasted him for not clearing his browser history. But I think more so with
Why'd
Jibble,
you have to say that, Michael?
Yeah. Because, you know, I made a tweet and said, you know, breaking news at the Rumble will be you know, JBL, Jibble versus his browser history in the Hell in a Cell. And he ended up blocking us. But it was cool. We was following no way. I think with Jibble, I think it's more so could be PR move because, you know, with the whole browser history and the whole porn thing and it went viral, now all of a sudden WWE is removing Legends. Because if I remember everything. If you remember the segment, the whole thing for season two, they did the Jimmy Hart interview that we still haven't seen. Haven't been released. He interviewed Jimmy Hart. He interviewed, I think, one or two other legends. I can't remember, that we just haven't seen just yet. And the last one we did was Bruno, which I really enjoyed. But besides, you know, Jibble blocking us, I mean, I enjoy Jibble. I like him when he's able to just talk and his perspective. And for all Stone Cold, I really don't get it. You know, they already made it four kids when he interviewed Vince, and he was asking them questions that Vince wasn't expecting. Then he made it four kids where everything was scripted, and you could tell. Because I'm sorry, guys, maybe I'm the only one. AK and Featherstone, you helped me out. I was so disappointed when he had that podcast with Michael. I was like, what is this? This felt so scripted. You know, it didn't feel real.
Oh, very contrived.
And I was like, what is this? This is horrible. I'm like, the podcast you did with, what was it, Charlotte? Who was it that?
Paige.
Paige was better than
that was
HBK.
The worst.
Yeah, I'd rather listen to the Paige, the HBK one than, you know, I've read the Paige one I enjoyed better than the HBK. So they already kind of scaled back on Austin and the road stories.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it too. You know, we all been to shows on the road, and you know, I've been privileged to be on the road with some of the boys too, different things. But I don't know. WWE has been making profits with their reality shows. Just make other reality shows. I don't see the point of getting rid of, like AK. I love the 24 stories. I love pulling the curtain where we can see, like, the curtain removed and see the real people instead of, because we see enough of the characters. We already got six, seven, eight, nine hours of wrestling a week of the whole as character as we like to see the real people. So what is that to say?
Yeah. Now we're going to get O's episodes, more O episodes. The content is going to expand of GWF. So we're going to see Lunatic Larry against Bushwick Jobber. So that's going to be our content. Although I did enjoy GWF back in the early 90s, but yeah. It's funny. It's funny. I was watching an episode of GWF. I was so disappointed with the Royal Rumble that I was writing about the Royal Rumble right after the Royal Rumble, and as I was writing, I was watching GWF. So that was a way to somehow make me feel better about a very
You got depressed.
Yeah, I was. If I'm not mistaken, Alfred, you actually liked the Royal Rumble match. I thought it was. I thought it was no good.
I thought it was ratchet.
It was a buzzkill with Orton winning. But we'll talk about that here in just a bit. Kazarian, he joins the Bullet Club. My biggest question to the both of you is: We'll start with Evan here. Do you think the faction has been diluted to NWO proportions?
It's funny, we literally just talked about this an hour or so ago on my show. The Bullet Club now has become NWO of 1998, where you have about 35 to 40 members plus another 20 sub-members and two other. It's getting ridiculous. At one point, the Bullet Club meant something. You know, you had, you know, of course, AJ, good buddy of mine, AJ, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and I call them Sons of Ming Sons. Okay, cool. Now you got Cody Rhodes joining, Karrion Kazarian joining, Adam Cole, Adam Page, and it's like you keep adding all this as diluting. It's like, who cares now? So who cares with the Bullet Club? Okay, so what? It doesn't have that strong feel anymore. It's like Paul Roma was with the Horsemen, or Sid was with the Horsemen. It just doesn't. Is diluted now. It doesn't have that big feel. I'm sorry, I can't forget Anderson and Gallows. When they was in the Bullet Club, it worked. It was
Finn Balor.
And strong. Balor was in the Bullet Club. Prince David. When Adam Cole joined that time on RH and they destroyed everything, you felt it like, yes. But now, if you ain't got nothing else to do creative, just throw with the Bullet Club and it'll work.
Yeah.
So, Alfred. Honestly, don't care.
Frustrating about the Bullet Club is there are so many parallels to the NWO that they openly acknowledge. They do the whole too sweet thing.
Yeah.
You know, you got these super over t-shirts where, you know, once upon a time the NWO had the best t-shirts in the business. In fact, I just bought an NWO t-shirt like 2 weeks ago because they were so awesome.
Nice.
Bullet Club has great t-shirts. No, they're awesome. Bullet Club has great t-shirts too, but I feel like that's what it's come down to is that now everybody wants to be part of the Bullet Club, not necessarily for the storyline or because it makes sense, because it's like, I really want to sell t-shirts that they can say Cody Rhodes, but in the shape of a Bullet Club. And I do think it's getting done. It's also protected it so well in Japan, which, you know, storytelling, and Japan does a good job of keeping their storyline simple and digestible, but this is getting out of control with the Bullet Club.
I agree. I keep thinking of like the NWO B team theme song. When I think of the Bullet Club now, I mean, everybody just... with like Conan and like VK Wall Street and like Horace Hogan.
I'm waiting for them to join the Bullet Club. Horace Hogan.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for them.
Exactly. Yeah, it was just, I mean... I'm, you know, the Bullet Club looked like a couple of years ago it was really good. And even last year, around this time last year is when Omega joined and kicked AJ out. Actually, it was around December because AJ, he got kicked out around, I think it was like December or November of 2015. right before he came to the Royal Rumble. And so, yeah, I mean, that it was still good when Omega led it. When Cole led it, I mean, you know, it's like you have your American version with, like, Cole at the helm. You know, now you have Kazarian there. And, I mean, it doesn't do anything for Kazarian. It's not like a big woo factor now. Like, oh, I mean, the fact that he was with Christopher Daniels, who's a good friend of mine, and the fact that they were tag teams for a long time, I mean, I see it from a standpoint of Kazarian joining the Bullet Club for the sake of Christopher Daniels, you know, being more of a babyface role. He hasn't been the babyface, right, single babyface in quite some time. And so, right, you know, he's 46 years old, about to be 47 this year, if I'm not mistaken. And
almost 50.
Yeah, and so it's like he's never won a major world championship. So with that, I think that they're just kind of having Kazarian join for the sake of really bumping up the babyface role of Christopher Daniels, which I'm cool with. I think Christopher Daniels is a fantastic – yeah, he's about to be 47 next month, actually. He's a fantastic wrestler. He's one of the best still at nearly 50. And he's never won a major championship. So I think this is the time. You know, he's still very, very good. And I think, you know, it's good for that sake, but just a Bullet Club, you know, a Bullet Club in general is just it's diluting by the person. the newest person that joins, it's just like, okay. Yeah, it really doesn't matter much anymore.
Shout out to the other oversaturated faction, the corporate ministry.
Oh. the corporate ministry was one of the worst concepts in the history of oh my gosh, it was absolutely horrible.
They're too clear for their own good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I had to bring this up.
Yes,
I had to do it.
You know what? I have to take my truck to the shop tomorrow morning. I'm gonna drive to the auto shop, blasting it. And
boom,
I dance on the
Humble One. Like, when they're going to, just before they say, we'll be right back. Like, this would be the background music.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, Tony Schiavone would just be right over it, right? Yeah. We got to go. What time? Yeah.
We got to go. The greatest match in the history of WCW.
Right. And yeah, I tell you what, Schiavone had some of the best cliffhangers ever. I mean, he was like the man when it came to cliffhangers. I always remember when Sting would come out in the rafters, and I mean, they really respected the cut off of the time, and it was just the cliffhangers for Nitro was absolutely impeccable.
Yeah.
To me, you would have the NWO jump someone like the Giant, and then Sting would come down from the rafters, and then there's Schiavone's cue, we gotta go, and it'll be like right at like 11 o'clock, and then Sting would come down the rafters, and then it'll be gone, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta wait till next week. You know, the cliffhangers were absolutely amazing.
It's not only that, and hopefully AK, if y'all both are Harlem Heat, and y'all both Steve Ray Booker T, and then I guess it makes me my buddy Ahmed Johnson, which I'm not too proud of. Black History Month.
You are significantly smaller than Ahmed Johnson.
Yeah. And shout out to you. You know, you say Stevie Ray and Ahmed, I'm friends with both of them. So I'm going to choose my words correctly because I know Steve. Yeah. I just saw Steve Ray the other day. He's not whipping my tail at all. But Nitro never ended. It was always to be continued, like the old action cartoon in the 90s. Remember, that was always to be continued.
Exactly.
And he always played because Turner owned, unlike Raw and USA, Turner owned the station and owned Nitro. So they would always say, well, we got an extra 10 minutes. And never before that you see the caption of Nitro, and then it would tease you like an extra 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And there's
right.
So many times where we still have no clue what happened with Sting and the NWO. How many
right.
times was Savage going to get lead dropped by Hogan?
Yeah.
You know, spray paint. And so, like, real quick, Schiavone was sarcastic. I'm speaking of Buff Bagwell facing Luger one time on Nitro. And Buff looks at the camera, which a lot of people don't do anymore. Buff looked at it, breaking the fourth wall, and said, "I'm the total package." And Tony Schiavone says, "Man, we still know who is." The little sarcastic comments that he used to do, you know, and you know, they said Schiavone's great. Ring of Honor, we need to pray for that resurrection. He call up Sinclair, call up Tony Schiavone. Get Tony Schiavone and Ring of Honor, and I'll definitely be watching Ring of Honor every week again.
I like Ring of Honor, but I tell you what, it would be kayfabe like no kayfabe before Schiavone.
Yeah, do you think Tony Schiavone would fit in that environment?
I do not.
Yeah, that's true.
Just imagine Schiavone calling super kicks from the Young Bucks. That would just be absolutely hilarious. I would pay for that.
I'm glad Don West, my man Don West, is back. Get him on commentary because, you know, oh my God.
Schiavone and Don West, that would be a very, very energetic.
Oh, I love Don West.
You do a
snapmare. Oh, it's a snapmare. Oh, it's a crossbody.
Can you believe it tonight?
It's an eye poke.
All right, for the second time, let's talk. Go ahead, Alfred.
There's this clip with Don West where it was a Raven match, and it was a hardcore match, and there was this big spot, and he goes, he meant to say, "Look at the horror," and he goes, "Look at the horror," and they cut this girl.
Yeah.
Horror.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. And he probably realized that he did it and just ran with it. You know, just and like, oops. Yeah.
Every time AJ, I don't know about you guys, but every time AJ to this day does the Pele, me and my buddies, we always yell, "It's the Pele, Every time he does,
he called the Pele perfectly. I loved it. Yeah, he did that perfectly. So my guy Thaddeus, Teddy Long, man, I have the utmost respect for Teddy Long, man. He is the quintessential, and you know, this is Black History Month, and we have three African Americans on the show tonight, and it just feels so right to me. He is the quintessential story of an African American 35 years ago. Just wanting a job, and you know, I remember watching his just his story on Legends of Wrestling when they used to do the round table, the Legends of the Round Table, and you know, he was talking about how he was a roadie, and you know, then he put together he got the robes, and then he put together the ring, and I mean, he just really climbed the ladder and just just showed people that. You know, when it comes to this country and just period, just dreams has no color, you know, and dreams have no color. And if you really want to do something, it doesn't matter where you're at, who you are, what color you are. If you have a dream, it's going to work if you keep pushing at it. Now, you know, there might be some opportunities that may be favored towards someone else or all that doesn't matter. When it comes to it, the fact that you want to achieve your dreams, you're going to do whatever you need to do to get there, and you're patient in the process. And I respect the heck out of Teddy Long. You know, the dude went from somebody's roadie, and he was saying he did not get paid a dime the first 6 months of him having anything to do with wrestling. And that still didn't stop him from continuing to go on being one of the most successful general managers, and now he is well deserved in the Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts, Alfred?
I love it. I think this is phenomenal. And if you look at the stable of wrestlers who either he managed or he rode with or whatnot, I mean, we're talking The Undertaker, JBL, Ron Simmons. He just had such a great stable, and he was so good. I as much as I love Teddy Long, and you know, people are going to remember him as this kind of fun-loving GM, longest-tenure GM in SmackDown history, which I think is a great accomplishment. But I loved the thugging and bugging era. I thought that was one of the greatest things I've seen in the modern era.
Mac Miller.
If you think of even one where, like, wrestling wasn't TV PG, the stuff that they would let him get away with saying. The hardest thing I've ever laughed at wrestling. He was talking about Shawn Michaels, and he's like, "And I want HBK, the Heartbreak Cracker." But he's still, like, he's still good. He's one of those guys, and this is rare talents who would take he would take nothing and he would turn it into something. And he was always getting the most out of everything he did. Not fuck Teddy Long.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Evan, what are your thoughts?
I don't want to seem like I'm always referring to the older references with you guys. I'm not sure who's the oldest here. I think Featherstone got me by a couple years, but I go further. I remember Teddy Long and Featherstone. I'm way good friends with Teddy Long. Teddy Long was on my show. Actually, shout out Teddy Long will be in my area. Be at a local show, I believe, in 2 weeks. I remember Teddy when he had no teeth in his mouth, and he brought the and I told Teddy, brother, you brought the do-rags into pro wrestling. Nobody wore do-rag in pro wrestling than Teddy Long. I'm talking about 1980s NWA when the programs was like 11x17s. I still got them here at my house. And I told Teddy Long, he bust out life. I said, brother, that's true. I remember even before he managed, me and my mom, Mama Tech, had a conversation about this too because she got me into wrestling. Teddy Long was a manager. Was a referee. So I remember Teddy Long in the NWA as a referee first. He was the only black referee I knew. You only knew two referees growing up back in the day. It was Tommy Young, who was a sliding referee. And,
he was a Dusty Finish referee.
It was Tommy Young, and it was Teddy Long as the black referee, and WWE had the Hepners, or Joey Morales. So, and then when Teddy was a referee, he was great. Then managing Dean with Butch Reed and Ron Simmons and you remember Ice Train and Scott Norton and B.J. Walker, Heartbreak Bobby Walker, I'm going way back. So, Teddy Long was just great, man. He went from referee to manager, back to referee in WWE, to manager again, the SmackDown GM. He just was great, man. One of my favorites of all time. We don't have many people to look up to, keeping it, as you say, 100. We as black brothers and black people, there's not too many positive influences or many people we can look up to as far as in the industry within the modern era. So, I'm proud of him. Shout out to Brother Slick, too, man. All we have was Slick and Theodore Long. I'm sorry, Theodore Arlong.
Yeah, absolutely. I said
Jive Soul Bro. Yeah, exactly. Jive Soul Bro, So shout out to Theodore Arlong, which was the government, and then called him Thaddeus, as King Booker used to call him.
Young Thaddeus, that's right.
Thaddeus.
Booker.
Thaddeus.
Absolutely. All right, so let's combine your thoughts of Elimination Chamber, Raw, and SmackDown in one fell swoop for each. Now let's start with Tech, with Evan, and take a little bit of time and let us know your thoughts on EC and Raw and SmackDown.
excuse me. Elimination Chamber was a good show. I don't remember the last time WWE had a program with three women's matches. Overall, the show was very well done. Harper and Orton was very well done. I definitely love anything that Harper does. His bald spot grows more and more each week. Naomi winning the women's title, loved it. Revy Black History Month or not, she deserved it. I thought the tag titles was okay, a little too much that went on, but okay. I thought the chamber match was good. The new look of the chamber, some people hated it. I understood it as far as keeping the boys safe. Chamber match was very well done, one of the better chambers. Glad Bray finally won it this 2 years too late, I would say. Didn't like how the Miz got carried. You build the Miz off as getting strong and getting a push, and he gets eliminated by one AA.
Yeah.
But yet Cena kicks out of Styles Clash, and everybody else kicks out everybody else's finisher. But Elimination Chamber, enjoyed the show. Still don't get the full man commentary, and it seems like WWE adds a new country every week to that house table. But Raw, I literally just was watching the main event of Raw as we was on the show. Main event match was solid. Owens and Jericho segment was okay. I did like the emotional pull of the little spread when Jericho gets the gift and is like, wait, you know, my name's on this list. I do like that. But Raw was okay. I'm glad to see the women still getting the main event of Raw. Still trying to figure out when is Stephanie McMahon a heel or she a face. So in SmackDown, I didn't really get to see much of it because I was live. From what I caught, SmackDown seems like a decent show. I did get word that Orton kneeled in front of Wyatt. I'm still trying to understand, you guys, the explanation of why Orton even joined the Wyatt family. I don't think we ever got it, but I don't think it matters anymore. So
he said if you can't beat them, join them.
That's a cop out. That's
it.
A cop
yeah.
out. Because like we don't hear any more about that brain disease that he had a few years ago. Remember that he was facing Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
He got diagnosed with that brain disorder that he just so happened to get cured from. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Just like Vince McMahon got cured from getting blown up in
a
car. Yeah.
Miracle
wrestler, wrestlers and wrestling talent are invincible somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like the Giant got cured from falling off a multi-story building. So, yeah, when he got pushed down by Hogan. Yeah, that was odd as well.
And don't forget his ironclad contract, too. Big Show has an ironclad contract, which doesn't matter anymore.
Alfred, what are your thoughts?
I thought Elimination Chamber was a very good show. I thought it was a hot crowd. We saw more Black history with Naomi winning the SmackDown Women's Championship. I like that match. I really loved the Nikki Bella versus Natalya match. I thought they did a really, really good job. That was one of the best matches, I think, on the night. The tag team turmoil match was pretty good. But I really thought that the Elimination Chamber was very well booked. I know, Evan, you said you didn't like how The Miz was booked. I actually thought that was, like, the most Miz booking I've seen, and that's a good thing. Like, that he came in, did the most heelish thing he could do, which is just steal a pinfall. He taunts Daniel Bryan with all of his moves, and then all of a sudden he gets shown up, and he gets his comeuppance, and everybody's happy. Like, and it's just such a great, like, subtle heel thing to do, to where he just comes in, gets everybody pissed off, and then gets eliminated immediately because he deserves it. And, you know, I don't think it really hurt him. But, yeah, I'm a big fan of Miz, so I never liked seeing him get pinned. But, I thought Elimination Chamber was great, how you start out with John Cena versus AJ Styles, just ride that wave of momentum from Royal Rumble, and they didn't disappoint. And the fans were very happy to see Bray Wyatt win, even though, people have read that was going to happen. So, very good booking on that end. I thought Raw was good, too. I really loved the Carnival of Friendship? Is that what they called it?
Festival of Friendship.
I thought it was very funny. I mean, it did drag a little bit, but the laughs were big laughs, especially with the Jericho art of him and Kevin Owens doing the Adam and Eve thing. That was hilarious. And like disappointed that this is where they chose to have Kevin Owens turn on Jericho. I thought it came too soon, but because I legitimately felt bad for Chris Jericho. Like I kind of was, you know, and if somebody, as you guys can attest to, who covers wrestling, it's kind of hard to be attached to those types of emotions. But you know, I felt bad for Chris Jericho, so it means that they're doing something right, and I'll be rooting for him against Kevin Owens. And then you know, SmackDown. I thought WWE had a good run of shows, and SmackDown might have come down a little bit. Nothing really too newsworthy. Bray and Randy, I think they're going to play it very well, where every week they're going to dissent, and then finally it's going to lead to an RKO on Bray Wyatt that everybody's going to pop huge for. So I think they're playing that correctly. But, you know, I think it's been a good week of WWE programming.
Yeah. I thought Elimination Chamber was pretty solid. I'm a big Naomi fan. I'm glad that she won the title. I wish that she would have chased it, though, especially having, you know, it being in Orlando. I wish that somehow it would have been a dirty finish and she would have actually got her moment. I mean, her first championship. That was my biggest critique. I think both champions were too premature. I think Naomi and Bayley were both premature. And it just kind of seems like, you know, it just really kind of seems like all the people I've interviewed, most of them say that booking is from week to week, and I just can't stand that because that's not how it used to be. I just wish that when you have stuff like that, I mean, because the problem is when you have stuff like that a lot, that's when you have all the multiple title changes. Like we see that with the Raw's division now, the Raw Women's division. I mean, Charlotte, she just won it at Roebuck, you know, in the line. you know, in less than two, you know, and 2 months later, she, you know, she loses it to Bayley, you know, and it's like, you know, all the her and Sasha hot potatoes, and it's just, it takes it, that to me, it dilutes the prestige and the relevance of the title if it just keeps going back and forth like the Intercontinental title used to do back in the Attitude Era days. I'm not a big fan of that at all. But, you know, I think Elimination Chamber was solid. I think that I'm still not sold on Wyatt. I might be the only one. I'm not sold on Wyatt being champion. I don't think his character is consistent enough. I don't think they've booked him consistent enough for him to be champion leading to WrestleMania. I think that if Elimination Chamber was like in May or June, I would be totally fine with it because it would be a nice little fresh start. But, you know, his first title reign with inconsistent character development being right before WrestleMania just to probably lose it to Orton, not a fan of that at all. So with Raw, I agree with you, Alfred, as far as just I kind of felt that this was going to be the moment where Kevin Owens turned. However, I do think, you know, it is a bit premature when you're nearly 2 months out of a WrestleMania and a pay-per-view, you know, in between that. Maybe Jericho will help Goldberg in a way and maybe distract Owens. So that can protect Owens' character in a way.
Right.
If they do that, you know, that could be a case. Rusev losing cleanly to Zayn, just for Zayn to most likely lose cleanly to Joe. I'm not a big fan of that either. So, as far as SmackDown's concerned, you know, like you said, Alfred, just nothing too big, nothing very newsworthy. I am liking Ambrose and Corbin. I think that's a good match for WrestleMania. Especially Corbin winning the Intercontinental title. I think he's one of the best heels in the entire WWE right now.
I think he should be
pushed accordingly.
Okay, good.
No. They're further developing Ambrose and Corbin.
It
looks like that'll be at WrestleMania, which I'm totally fine with.
He looks fun for the Mighty Ducks. Ambrose, it was like Mighty Ducks 3. Ambrose was the high school, college kids that was fighting them in D3. It was just like that. So
I remember the Mighty Ducks back
then. Remember, Triple H did talk to Owens before, so we got to think. What were Owens? Because remember, Triple H is the reason why Owens became champ.
Right.
Seth Rollins, and now, you know, Samoa Joe is his boy. So we got to wonder, like, what exactly. And please don't let us see a Triple H Jericho match. I hope not. We don't need no rematch of WrestleMania 18.
Are you serious?
See that?
No way.
Slam Jericho.
I really hope that they don't do that whatsoever.
We don't even need Triple H in this storm. Like, what is he doing? Like, I feel like WWE just realized that Triple H crowned Kevin Owens a champion, and Kevin Owens was supposed to be aligned with Triple H, but, like, this is the first time they've interacted since then. But it's unnecessary. Like, Triple H is already feuded with Rollins, and you got Joe in there. Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho don't need anything else in that feud. I don't know what Triple H is going to be doing with this feud, but I don't think it's going to be good.
I think that might have just been a one-off type of deal with Raw. I think he was just kind of manipulating Owens to say, you know, I helped you. You know, we'll probably see a promo on it next week on Raw. You know, him saying that, you know, I helped Triple H. Help me, you know, he was talking to me, and, you know, I've been, you know, I haven't done him justice, you know, I've been, you know, this and that, you know, there's, it'll probably just be squandered, you know, in just one promo. So, all right, real quick, ladies and gentlemen, we got the Flavor of the Week coming up.
It is now time for the Flavor of the
of us have our three desired matches to happen at WrestleMania 23. The card's pretty much locked in, but if we could shuffle it a little bit, this is what we would have done. So we'll start with Evan. Number three.
Put me first. Still going to say Sting and Taker. I'm not giving up on it.
Oh, Lord.
But, I would, yeah, that's,
Sting and Taker.
That's a spot there. I would say currently Cena against Undertaker will be big. That will be box office. You got me on the spot. If they build Joe good enough, Goldberg against Joe, or then maybe Brock against Joe will go well. And I don't know. You got me on this one. You got me getting time to think. I can't think of a third one right now. Will you come back to me?
All right. We'll come back to you in the third one. What you got, Alfred?
I'd love to see Braun Strowman against Brock Lesnar. Either Brock or Goldberg would be great, but I think they could have split off with Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar. Could have been a very interesting match. One of these heavyweight clashes that if Brock Lesnar loses to Braun Strowman, you know, the guy is made. And that's what's something WWE hasn't been able to do is, you know, create that next level new star consistently at WrestleMania. They usually just rely on the part-timers. And but for the same reasons, I would like to see Goldberg against Roman Reigns. I thought there was a lot of heat there when they did the stare down a couple months ago and teased that. I think that would be a very interesting match. It's obviously one that you'd have to keep short, but, you know, people would be behind Goldberg and they could boo Roman Reigns if they want, but it would be a very intriguing match for the same reason that I think Roman Reigns and Undertaker is going to be intriguing. But I'll tell you one match that I want to see more than anything right now, and it's very cool for WWE to be teasing it as well as they are. Daniel Bryan versus The Miz seems like it's on its way to being a WrestleMania main event. And I, for the life of me, like, it's one thing to kind of subtly tease that they have friction. What they're doing with this storyline, it's almost as if they have it's going to culminate in a WrestleMania match. With The Miz is constantly saying, Daniel Bryan, you can't wrestle. He's constantly stealing his moves. And as a heel, he should be the guy doing that because eventually Daniel Bryan's going to come back and prove him wrong. But, I mean, it doesn't sound like that's what's going to happen anytime soon because WWE pretty much forced him to retire and whatnot. But, boy, do I want to see Daniel Bryan versus The Miz more than anything. I mean, ever since that promo The Miz cut last summer, which is one of the best promos I've ever seen in my life, you know, they haven't let up of the momentum of that promo and that feud. But, you know, it's leading to nothing. But that's the WrestleMania match that I think we need to see.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so we have did you figure out something yet, Evan?
Yeah, with AK, Miz and Daniel Bryan definitely will be great. I mean, the way they booked the Miz since that promo definitely elevated the Miz career. And you got to, Daniel Bryan can wrestle. We said it before. I mean,
I know.
They can do it. They'll be stop being chickens.
Yeah, I think that would be fantastic. I like Goldberg Reigns, too. That would have been, like, my fourth choice. Number three to me is Rusev versus Kurt Angle. I think that Rusev was most likely has – I mean, it doesn't seem like he has anything to do right now with WWE, especially losing cleanly to Sami Zayn out of anyone. And I think that, you know – you have enough time to bring Angle back and, you know, do a good build and have Rusev, you know, go against Angle. I mean, whoever wins.
Rusev came out in the tape. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
that was something else. So, I mean, I think him and Angle would do great. I think if you haven't really had the anti-American thing from Rusev recently. I think Rusev's work on the mic is hilarious, and on Twitter, he's hilarious. And handsome Rusev, I think that's funny. Does anybody know why he's wearing the mask?
Broke his nose.
He legit broke his nose.
Did he really? Like when? Where?
Yeah. I think it was Kofi.
Oh, wow. You know what? I think I might have heard about that. Yeah. I think that's because I remember it was like the Royal Rumble. And I was with a bunch of people, and we're like, did we miss something? Did he really break his nose? So, yeah, that's. And they're still not. He broke his nose, and he's not even involved in the storyline. They don't give him time off, but they give Cena time off.
He's not Cena.
I guess that's how the echelon works. Yeah. Huh. Anyways, number two. See, the thing is with Lesnar and Strowman, it sounds good, but I cannot stand I don't like non-distinctions of faces and heels. I do not like that. If you have two faces, I'm cool with that. If you have a face versus heel, traditional, I'm even better with it. But as long as we know who you are, I mean, I can't stand all these tweeners nowadays. I mean, I just think it just really dilutes what professional wrestling is all about when you just have people saying, you know, cheering. Like Anaheim, Anaheim made a non-wrestling fan very confused if they watched it the first time. They would think that Bray Wyatt, Dolph Ziggler, are the baby faces. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's hard to distinguish when it comes to these crowds. I just do not like how people just aren't distinctively baby faces or heels. And, you know, so many people like, I think Vince Russo said, you know, there's no such thing. Okay, yeah, wrestling's a real-life comic book. So that's like the same thing as saying Batman or Superman isn't a clear-cut babyface. And, you know, the Green Goblin or the Joker aren't heels. That just doesn't make sense. So I'm not a big fan of that. So that's the reason why I wouldn't do Lesnar and Strowman unless, you know, Lesnar's a babyface, but I think he's a better heel. So I'll do Goldberg Strowman instead because Goldberg's a very clear-cut babyface. And then my number one is Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. I want to see that version too, but I want to see Roman Reigns win because Brock Lesnar, he's put no one over new. He's lost to Triple H, John Cena, The Undertaker since he's been back 4 years. He's put no one over new. As we saw with Dean Ambrose, he doesn't care. So, I mean, he needs to put someone over. So those are my three. Final thoughts, Alfred, and let us know where we can find you.
That's great to be here. There's nowhere else I'd want to spend my Valentine's Day. You guys have made my night. Follow me on Twitter at This Is Nasty. Alfred Kunnel III. Like Chris said at the top, I'll be doing post shows for the Raw, SmackDown, and pay per view. So go on Sports Tita and Bleacher Report and all that good stuff. Guys, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks. Have a good night, man. Thanks a lot for being on the show. Evan, thanks, man, for being on the show once again this week. Once again, let everybody know where we can find you.
We can follow Under the Mat Radio every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio on the YouTube page, Under the Mat Radio. Check us out at Under the Mat Radio, Instagram, Facebook, and email. Let everybody know we do have famed musician and author Daryl Davis will be on our show March 7th on the Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. He wrote his book on clandestine relationships, a black man's viewpoint going into the Ku Klux Klan. He just was on Steve Harvey's show. He's not a Ku Klux Klan member, but he definitely it's a good book. Please read it. Please listen to it about racism and what's going on in the world today.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot, Evan. Special shout out to my lovely wife, Mar Tiffany. Valentine's Day, and yeah, it's my Valentine. It's my girl forever, my lovely wife, and she's amazing, and we're amazing as a couple, and I thank God for her. So Valentine's Day was about a half an hour ago, but there you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, God bless you all, and thanks for Laura Van Ness. Thanks for everybody. You have a great night. God bless.